Holy Word in the Old Testament in the book of Leviticus, the 25th chapter of the book of Leviticus. A long chapter, but a very interesting one. Leviticus chapter 25. The Lord said to Moses on Mount Sinai, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, when you enter the land I am going to give you, the land itself must observe a Sabbath to the Lord." The word Sabbath meaning rest, of course. "For 6 years sow your fields, and for 6 years prune your vineyards and gather their crops. But in the 7th year the land is to have a Sabbath of rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. Do not sow your fields or prune your vineyards. Do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the grapes of your untended vines. The land is to have a year of rest. Whatever the land yields during the Sabbath year will be food for you, for yourself, your manservant and maidservant, and the hired worker and temporary resident who live among you, as well as for your livestock and the wild animals in your land. Everything is thought of. Whatever the land produces may be eaten. Count off," this is the year of Jubilee, "count off 7 Sabbaths of years," 7 times 7 years, "so that the 7 Sabbaths of years amount to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement. Sound the trumpet." Notice in the order of the annual festivals, the trumpet was sounded in the autumn, in the month of October, on the 1st day of the month. But here, sounded on the 7th, on the 10th day of the month, on the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet throughout your land. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. And we think the word jubilee, of course, is connected with the word trumpet. Each one of you is to return to his family property, and each to his own clan or tribe. The 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. Do not sow and do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the untended vines. For it is a jubilee, and it is to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. In this year of Jubilee, everyone is to return to his own property. If you sell land to one of your countrymen or buy any from him, do not take advantage of each other. You are to buy from your countryman on the basis of the number of years since the Jubilee, and he is to sell to you on the basis of the number of years left for harvesting crops. When the years are many, you are to increase the price, and when the years are few, you are to decrease the price, because what he is really selling you is the number of crops. Do not take advantage of each other, but fear your God. I am the Lord your God. Follow my decrees and be careful to obey my laws, and you will live safely in the land. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and live there in safety. You may ask, what will we eat in the 7th year if we do not plant or harvest our crops? It doesn't mention the 49th year, but the 7th year, notice. I will send you, but presumably this would apply to the 49th year as well. I will send you such a blessing in the 6th year. This is marvelous. This is the grace of God. This is the provision of God. I will send you such a blessing in the 6th year that the land will yield enough for 3 years. While you plant during the 8th year, you will eat from the old crop and will continue to eat from it until the harvest of the 9th year comes in. Isn't that wonderful? The land must not be sold permanently, because the land is mine, and you are but aliens and my tenants, says the Lord. Throughout the country that you hold as a possession, you must provide for the redemption of the land, because it belongs to the Lord. If one of your countrymen becomes poor and sells some of his property, his nearest relative is to come and redeem what his countryman has sold. Thinking of the book of Ruth. If, however, a man has no one to redeem it for him, but he himself prospers, the poor man prospers, and acquires sufficient means to redeem it, he is to determine the value of the year since he sold it, and refund the balance to the man to whom he sold it. He can then go back to his own property. But if he does not acquire the means to repay it, what he sold will remain in the possession of the buyer until the year of Jubilee. It will be returned in the Jubilee, and he can then go back to his property. If a man sells a house in a walled city, now the Lord possesses the land, but he doesn't possess what is laid upon the land or built upon the land to the same extent. Notice that. It's the land, not property on it. If a man sells a house in a walled city, especially in a walled city, which of course is man-built, he retains the right of redemption a full year after its sale. During that time, he may redeem it. If it is not redeemed before a full time has passed, the house and the walled city shall belong permanently to the buyer and his descendants. He may have built it, you see. It is not to be returned in the Jubilee. But houses in villages without walls round them are to be considered as open country. They can be redeemed, and they are to be returned in the Jubilee. The Levites always have the right to redeem their houses in the Levitical towns which they possess. So the property of the Levites is redeemable. That is, a house sold in any town they hold, because the Levites are special, of course, and is to be returned in the Jubilee, because the house in the towns of the Levites are their property among the Israelites, according to God's law. But the pasture land belonging to their towns must not be sold. It is their permanent possession. If one of your countrymen becomes poor and is unable to support himself among you, help him as you would an alien or a temporary resident, so that he can continue to live among you. Do not take interest of any kind from him, but fear your God, so that your countrymen may continue to live among you. You must not lend him money at interest, or sell him food at a profit. Well, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. Never forget that. If one of your countrymen becomes poor among you and sells himself to you, do not make him work as a slave. He is to be treated, because he's an Israelite, as a hired worker or a temporary resident among you. He is to work for you until the year of Jubilee. Then he and his children are to be released, and he will go back to his own clan and to the property of his forefathers. Because the Israelites are my servants, whom I brought out of Egypt, they must not be sold as slaves. Do not rule over them ruthlessly, but fear your God. Your male and female slaves are to come from the nations around you. From them you may buy slaves. You may also buy some of the temporary residents living among you and members of their clans born in your country, and they will become your property. You can will them to your children as inherited property and can make them slaves for life, but you must not rule over your fellow Israelites ruthlessly. If an alien or a temporary resident among you becomes rich, and one of you, your countrymen, an Israelite, becomes poor and sells himself to the alien living among you or to a member of the alien's clan, he retains the right of redemption after he has sold himself. One of his relatives may redeem him. An uncle or a cousin or any blood relative in his clan may redeem him. Or if he prospers, he may redeem himself. He and his buyer are to count the time from the year he sold himself up to the year of Jubilee. The price for his release is to be based on the rate paid to a hired man for that number of years. If many years remain, he must pay for his redemption a larger share of the price paid for him. If only a few years remain until the year of Jubilee, he is to compute that and pay for his redemption accordingly. He is to be treated as a man hired from year to year. You must see to it that his owner does not rule over him ruthlessly, because he is a child of God. He is an Israelite. Even if he is not redeemed in any of these ways, he and his children are to be released in the year of Jubilee, for the Israelites belong to me as servants. They are my servants, whom I brought out of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Amen. May God bless to us his holy and most wonderful word. The Old Testament, the book of Leviticus, chapter 25. I think you will agree that chapter 25 is a rather wonderful chapter, because it stands back somewhat spaciously from masses of detail, although there's much detail there, to view the life of Israel in the round and long term, and prescribes measures for the well-being, the health, and the true prosperity of the nation, whose principles, if not all its applications of those principles, might well be adopted by our society today with beneficent and blessed effect. However, it is a question, you know, how far Israel herself observed these laws. When we read, for instance, in Isaiah 5 and 8, "Woe to you who add house to house and join field to field till no space is left and you live alone in the land." Or Amos 2 and 6, "They sell the righteous for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. They trample on the heads of the poor and deny justice to the oppressed." But you see, the basic principles of justice are permanent, whether men observe them in any age or not. The basic principle here is that of Sabbath rest, which always excites me, because I am convinced that rest is one of the most important, if not the most important, concept with regard to human life. Only here, the Sabbath is extended from weekly to yearly, and then to 50 yearly, the Jubilee, with fascinating results. The observance of these rules would have been attended with adjustments to the life of society, not least delivering the populace from sheer materialism and showing mercy to the unfortunate or the wayward, and of course was calculated to establish a society with a wonderful balance to its economy and not least ecologically sound. Oh, that politicians would read and mark and inwardly digest these injunctions and see how they might apply them today in order to balance and liberate our present society from so many of its blunders and bondages. But the trouble is, today there is no absolute authority by which to command acceptance of such laws or compliance with them. If there were, the balance which law and rule give to legitimate freedom is wonderful. Let me say that again. If there were the balance which law and rule give to legitimate freedom is wonderful. Not much wonder, though James speaks in his letter of the perfect law of liberty, 1:25, and the royal law according to the scriptures, 2:8. You see, there is such peace and contentment in a life regulated by such gracious laws as the lawless and extravagant, alas, never know. It is a secret of which they are tragically and often willfully ignorant. But let us ask the question, how far do we understand these principles, let alone seek to implement them in our daily lives? You see that chapter 25 first applies the concept of Sabbath rest to the land itself, which of course belongs to the Lord and is given to Israel in trust. The land is to lie fallow for 1 year in seven. And this of course has multiple advantages, not only for the land, but for the people, because of the blessings of self-control and self-denial, combating the dangers of human greed. This principle would undoubtedly place a curb on the potential tycoon, wouldn't it? Who would love, as Isaiah says, to carry all before him, devouring the wealth of the nation, and then from his lordly throne, very likely having acquired a knighthood or peerage in the process for filling his own coffers, he would distribute a little of his largesse charitably to the very poor he had filched it from. A year of rest is almost bound to bring hotheads to their senses and remind them of God's blessings during the other 6 or 49, when they ought to have been storing against the sabbatical or jubilee year. And how wonderful it is to put one's trust only in God for a year's sustenance. We mostly know nothing of this at all. Think, for one thing, of how it would tax the ingenuity of people to make ends meet. But it might also help them to concentrate their minds and hearts' attention on other than material things for a change. That would apply to the Jubilee year with its more radical injunctions. On the 50th year, in the autumn, and commencing on the Day of Atonement on the 10th of October, the most solemn day of the year for Jews, Israel deeply repented of her sins, and the trumpets sounded throughout the land. As I was commenting during the reading, this takes up the notion of the trumpet on the first day of the month in Leviticus 23:23-25. And probably, as I also suggested, the name Jubilee derives from the trumpet. Here, on the Day of Atonement, the people were all to come to their senses and repent. Not only for a day, but in the case of the Jubilee, for a whole year, when the land was to lie fallow, and the people were to eat only what the land naturally produced without cultivation. But how was the nation to survive on that meager diet? Ah, verses 22 to 24 show, although there it is applied to the 7, not the 50 years, although we believe it would apply to that as well. How are they to survive? On the 6th year, the Lord was pleased to provide such a bumper crop and harvest and food that would last to the 9th year. Marvelous. We should never forget, you know, that nature, including harvests or lack of them, nature is absolutely under his control. And let it be asserted, it is controlled in the interest of his obedient children. No doubt about that. What a thought! God controls the universe, weather and everything, in the interest of his church, his children, his people. Do you believe it? I wonder if everyone believes that, but surely it's true. The world was created for his church, was it not? For what other reason? So during the Jubilee year, all sales of the land during the preceding 49 years were cancelled, and properties reverted to their original, that is, their traditional owners. For the land being the Lord's must not be sold permanently. Any sale must take into consideration how near or far the sale was from the year of Jubilee, when it had to be returned to its traditional owner, the price being fixed according to the number of years the purchaser had used it and the number of crops it had produced. And this had to be done, notice, and this is the important thing, in the fear of the Lord, who was watching, always watching, with particular care of those in poverty who had to sell their property. Indeed, it was the responsible of the poor man's nearest relative. Compare the idea of the kinsman redeemer, the Goel, in the book of Ruth that I hinted at in the reading. It was the responsibility of the poor man's nearest relative to buy the land if he could. If in the meantime the poor man began to prosper and was able to buy the land back himself, the price had to be adjusted according to the purchaser's use of it and to what it had produced during the years of his occupancy of it. You see there God's care for the poor and needy, and how full of mercy and compassion his justice is. Oh, see that justice, full of mercy and compassion. We must constantly bring his laws near to his mercy and grace. Oh, are you listening to that? We must constantly bring his laws near to his mercy and grace, inasmuch as Jesus sums up the Ten Commandments with their 8 negative thou shalt not. He sums them up in 2 positive commandments: to love God and love our neighbor. Notice that it is the land which belongs to God, not man-made houses and walled cities. Rules with regard to these are different. The owner selling such a house can buy it back within a year, but after that, it belongs to the purchaser perpetually, land tenure. The only exception to this rule is the Levites, whose houses are their own and are therefore redeemable at any time, but not the pasture lands. They are the Lord's perpetual possession in the interest of the Levites. Now, the section from verse 35 concerning the poor shows God's great concern for them. They must not be exploited by the rich in charging interest for necessary loans to keep body and soul together, or make profit from any food they may buy from them. God is watching. Oh, remember that. Remember that God is watching. If a man becomes so poor that he makes himself a hired servant to a fellow Israelite, you must not treat him as a slave. He is your unfortunate brother. And if he remains in need to the year of Jubilee, he is to be released from all obligation to the one who hired him, and he is free with his wife and family to return to his own clan, who presumably would care for him. Then it was different, of course, with regard to those of other nations. They could sell themselves to Israelites to be their slaves as their property. If such an alien prospers and becomes rich, and a poor Israelite sells himself to him, then he must retain the right of redemption. He is still an Israelite. Any blood relation may redeem him, and the price such a relative pays will depend upon the years of the man's slavery up to the Jubilee year. He must not be treated as a helpless slave. He is a son of Israel. And if no one redeems him up to the Jubilee year, then he must be released, and in the meantime his master must not treat him ruthlessly. He is a son of Israel. Israelites, even more than the land, belong to God, and anyone who transacts business with them must remember that he is dealing with one of God's children. Touch not the Lord's children. Now you see that in our modern society, a good deal of that, as to its rules, might not apply in our society. But a good deal of it is in accordance with ecological principles and is not unrelated to principles of rotation with regard to crops, to the wisdom of letting the ground lie fallow from time to time. Give it a rest, like God rested and is earnestly teaching us to rest, not least from our striving, as the Hebrew letter tells us. But even where the details are not appropriate, the underlying principles are abiding and are perpetually relevant to our lives because they accord with the beneficent law of God. See how I'm tying the grace and the law of God together. They should never have been separated by anyone. The beneficent law of God. Here are some principles that must be set as fundamental to all our thinking about our corporate life. Here they are. God owns everything. Well, he made it. God rules. God reigns. He is watching. He cares for his own. And he has a particular compassion for the unfortunate and the needy. He also judges. I am deeply impressed with the integration of the law with the gospel as indeed anyone who values the Old Testament must. Indeed, one of the reasons for first starting the series of monthly articles in the record which resulted in the booklet Sweeping Through the Old Testament, the reason for starting that was to show younger men in the ministry particularly how vastly important it was to incorporate in their ministry the equal teaching of the Old Testament with the New. I say equal, but the two covenants, Old Covenant and New Covenant, Old Testament and New Covenant, are not equal in volume. So that in fact there would need to be much more Old Testament teaching than New Testament teaching if we were to balance the two covenants. I'm not sure how that works out, but some of you who have sat here for 40 years and more should know about that as much as I do. And I have always believed that I was guided as to the sequence of the ministry with regard to both Testaments and alternating the two, and alternating different parts of the two Testaments. That's not to say there have been no mistakes through the years, and no imbalances and discrepancies, but on the whole, I believe the Word has been ministered in ways that have been generally pleasing to the Lord, and we've sought to cover the Scriptures a number of times. And the result of that is that we have gained an overall view of the Holy Scriptures, and therefore have been afforded the best opportunity anyone could have to lead a balanced life. There comes my tightrope illustration again with its balance. But there are so many ways in which this balance may be characterized. Certainly, the integration of the two testaments is bound to lead to a balanced view of life. For we are able to view God's story from the beginning and see right through to the end, and therefore have some idea of our own personal place in the total divine economy throughout history, and that's something. We have a place in history. We need to know as far as we may what it is so that we may fulfill the Lord's will. Even to view 50 years of life and the end of it, as many would, as a desired goal, even to view 50 years of life or of service affords perspective and proportion to life. We settle down to make the most of the years. And with the law of God in our hands, and a passionate conviction that God is good and that His law must be good also, we seek to live by His law and find, in fact, not only that His law works in daily life, but that it works wonders and leads to all manner of blessed outcomes and results. And of all the principles which underlie that attitude to life, that of rest, I believe very passionately, is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, and certainly appeals very deeply to me. I certainly believe that having learned the principle of rest in what could have been, with increasing and expanding outreaches, a very busy life, I believe that having learned the principle of rest has enabled one to sustain the years. Because work has proceeded from rest to rest. There's something almost musical about this. I don't know quite how to put it. But I think there is, but I better not get bogged down with that. But resting. But my life's work is one of working between rests. Well, of course, that's true of all of us, isn't it? What have we beds for? And couches, too. I feel sure that this is a principle which most people have to come to terms with if they are to remain, well, if they are to remain living, and if they are to remain healthy, and certainly if they are to remain efficient as they grow up and as they grow old. Rest. What is it that Drew plays so beautifully, mainly at funeral services? Mendelssohn's "O Rest in the Lord." And we read it and wait patiently for him, and he will give you your heart's desire. I'm so impressed with that as a fundamental principle of life that I want to close what I have to say this morning by reading with you, or to you, as you prefer, the 37th Psalm. Psalm 37. Here's a whole series of sermons in one. Psalm 37. Do not fret because of evil men, or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Delight yourself. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way. To the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteousness shine. Wonderful word. Like the dawn, the justice of your cause will shine like the noonday sun. See the relation between justice and grace? Be still before the Lord and wait. Well, some people can't be anything else but still. But be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when men succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. For evil men will be cut off, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. A little while, and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy great peace. You know, we could apply that to buildings as well as to land, when so many are being closed and turned into something else. Not so here. The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. The wicked draw the sword and bend the bow to bring down the poor and needy, to slay those whose ways are upright. But their swords will pierce their own hearts, and their bows will be broken. Better the little that the righteous have than the wealth of many wicked, for the power of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The days of the blameless are known to the Lord. I've written into my Bible here, it pays to be good. And their inheritance will endure forever. In times of disaster they will not wither. In days of famine they will enjoy plenty. But the wicked will perish. The Lord's enemies will be like the beauty of the fields. They will vanish like smoke. The wicked borrow and do not repay, but the righteous give generously. Those the Lord blesses will inherit the land, but those he curses will cut off. If the Lord delights in a man's way, he makes his steps firm, though he stumble, as people tend to do when they get very old, yes, he will not fall, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. I was young, and David must have written this in his old age, I was young and now I am old, yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. They are always generous and lend freely. Their children will be blessed. What a word, what a word. What wisdom, oceans of wisdom. Turn from evil and do good. Then you will dwell in the land forever. For the Lord loves the just and will not forsake his faithful ones. They will be protected forever. But the offspring of the wicked will be cut off. The righteous will inherit the land and dwell in it forever. He's saying over and over again. The mouth of the righteous man utters wisdom, and his tongue speaks what is just. The law of his God is in his heart. Ah, that's the place that changes a man. The law of his God is in his heart. Jeremiah 31:33. His feet do not slip. The wicked lie in wait for the righteous, seeking their very lives. But the Lord will not leave them in their power, or let them be condemned when brought to trial. Wait for the Lord and keep his way. He will exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you will see it. I have seen, says the psalmist, a wicked and ruthless man flourishing like a green tree in its native soil. Think of Psalms, what is it, 73. But he soon passed away and was no more. Though I looked for him, he could not be found. Consider the blameless. Observe the upright. There is a future for the man of peace. But all sinners will be destroyed. The future of the wicked will be cut off. The salvation of the righteous comes from the Lord. He is their stronghold in time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. Isn't that great? That wonderful? Oh, surely it is. Now, let's close our service by singing John Greenleaf Whittier. We wouldn't sing everything that he wrote, but we sing this. 245, Dear Lord and Father of mankind, forgive our foolish ways.